Well, welcome to our study of Exodus. Exodus is the second book in the Pentateuch. And the Hebrews called the book Exodus, and these are the names. When you take a look at verse 1, you'll see where they got that. The book of Exodus is divided into 40 chapters. Now, this is going to be so important, I want you to remember it on the test. The book of Exodus reveals the events surrounding the birth of Israel as a nation. And you're going to want to remember that we're talking about Israel as a nation. The word Exodus means exit or departure. This also will be on your test. You're going to want to remember that the word Exodus means exit or departure. It relates to Israel's departure from Egypt and can be compared to salvation from sin and death. Now, I want y'all to think about that for just a minute, because that's a pretty weighty statement I just made, isn't it? This Exodus, the Exodus, it relates to Israel's departure from Egypt. We all know that, right? But it can be compared to salvation from sin and death. We make our own exodus too, don't we? When we're called out, when we accept Jesus as our Savior, we have that nature change, right? And we leave that life of sin and the death, and we have new life, don't we? A new birth. We're called out. We make an exodus. In Genesis chapter 15, verses 13 and 14, we see that God told Abraham, he foretold him what was going to happen. And I want to just go back to Genesis and read that together, because this will remind you. If you'll turn to Genesis chapter 15 with me, I want us just to read that. In verses 13 and 14. And he said to Abram, know of a surety. So I'm not telling you something that maybe, kind of might. Know for a surety that your seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance. So God told Abram what would happen. And we know, after just finished reading Genesis together, that Abram didn't keep this information to himself, did he? He told his sons, and they told their sons, and so on and so forth. So I want you to keep that in mind, that God told Abraham that his descendants would be foreigners in a land that they did not possess. And you remember how that came to be, don't you? With Joseph and his brothers. You remember the famine. That they would be oppressed and serve these people 400 years. Now we're going to find out, because when we left off in Genesis, they were living in the land of Goshen, weren't they? But things were fine. They had the favor of Pharaoh because of Joseph, didn't they? We're going to find out when we read the beginning of Exodus how that turned and what happened. But we also know that God told Abram that his descendants would be as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand by the sea, right? Couldn't even count them. So it shouldn't be a surprise to any of us that they grew and multiplied mightily, right, in the land of Goshen. So we know that they would be oppressed. God told them these people would be oppressed and serve those people in their foreign land for 400 years. And afterwards, he promised to judge the nation and to deliver Abraham's descendants. He said that he would leave that country. They would leave that country with great possessions. Now, Exodus declares the fulfillment of that promise through its documentation. You know, we can rest in the Word of God, can't we? that everything that God says is going to come to pass. We might not know the timing, but we can know for a surety, just like God said to Abram, for surety, it's coming to pass. And in Genesis 50:25, which we just read, Joseph assured his relatives that God would visit them. He gave them a command to carry his bones with them when they left Egypt. Exodus records the fulfillment of the promise made to Joseph by his relatives, and they carried his bones out of Egypt. Now God foretold the Exodus before it occurred. His word to Abraham was perfectly fulfilled when the Israelites made their exodus from Egypt. They came out in the fourth generation, 430 years after Jacob went to Egypt to live. And so we'll begin with chapter 1. Now in this chapter we're going to learn a lot of things. We're going to learn about the multiplication of the descendants of Jacob, the oppression of the descendants of Israel after the deaths of Joseph and those of his generation, Pharaoh's order to kill all the newborn male babies of the Hebrews, the midwife's fear of God, the increase of the descendants of Israel, God's blessings upon the Hebrew midwives, and Pharaoh's command to drown all the Hebrew newborn babies. So let's start with the first five verses of Exodus together. Now these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. Every man and his household came with Jacob: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. And all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, for Joseph was in Egypt already.
I think that's self-explanatory.
In verse 5, we had 70 descendants. And y'all remember we read about that in chapter 46 of Genesis, and we counted all those descendants. In verses 6 and 7, and Joseph died, and all his brethren, and all that generation, and the children of Israel were fruitful, and increased abundantly, and multiplied, and waxed exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. Let me keep going.
So just remember there, no man died.
Yes.
Not to go into Egypt because of their sin before the Lord, as the nations. That they died.
Yes. And so I've read verses 6 and 7.
Okay. Everything's going fine as long as Joseph is alive, okay? Mm-hmm. But once Joseph dies and the people of that generation of Joseph, the Egyptians I'm referring to, the Israelites were fruitful, they multiplied, they greatly increased, and they became numerous, and so the land filled by this time with the Israelites. Now, I want you to think about that, you know, to be fruitful and multiply. They're doing exactly that without understanding so much what they're doing. That they're producing a nation. They're going from 70 people into a multitude of people, a great nation that will make its exodus eventually, okay? And it's a threat to the Egyptians because they're increasing, their population's increasing faster than the Egyptians.
And now there arose a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, Behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come on, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and it come to pass that when there also falleth out any war, they join also unto our enemies, and fight against us, and so get them up out of the land.
And so a new Pharaoh comes to the forefront, a new king. He goes, sends to the throne in Egypt. He didn't know Joseph. So he spoke to his constituents, leader saying, look, the descendants of Israel are more numerous than the Egyptians. And so we better act wisely. We better prevent them from allying with our enemies and fighting against us and leaving Egypt. In other words, we got a pretty good deal going right now. And so we got to do something to prevent them from leaving us, okay?
Therefore, they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramesses.
So, what you have to understand is, you know, when Jacob went to Egypt, they weren't in bondage.
Mm-hmm.
Things were going well. Joseph was in leadership. And so for several years, they're not slaves. But the day comes when this new king arises and he says, all right, then we're going to make these people our servants. Now the oppression begins. And so he's setting taskmasters over them. In other words, people to assign them jobs and to make sure that they do their jobs. It's a forced labor. And so he's forcing them to build the cities of Pithom and Ramesses. And these cities are actually serving the king as supply centers for Egypt, okay?
But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because the children of Israel and the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor.
It's an interesting thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
God's people are oppressed, and the more they're oppressed, the more they multiply. And that's a happy thought for you if you think about it, that you're not going, the enemy is not going to overthrow God. He's not going to prevent the word of God from coming to pass. And God says God watches over that word to be certain that that word does what he says it's going to do. And this is exactly what's happening. They're under heavy oppression, but they're multiplying more and more.
And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor.
Now here again, obviously this is a wicked king. And the more they're oppressing the Israelites, the more they're increasing. And so now he's threatened. In other words, what we're doing is not working. We're going to have to do something to prevent this growth because this oppression is not getting it. So we're going to have to take, you know, stronger measures.
And the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of the one was Shiprah and the name of the other Puah. And he said, when you do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stools, if it be a son, then you shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live.
Now, isn't it interesting that back then women could have babies without doctors? But today, society tells you that's an impossibility, right? No, they had midwives delivering these babies. So Pharaoh tells these midwives, all right, any male child born, kill him. So, you know, it's all right to keep the women, but kill the male child. Why? That would be the potential military force against them, okay?
Mm.
So they're to kill the males. But these midwives fear God.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't do exactly what they're told to do, even though they have a mandate from the king. The Egyptians are doing all they know to do to treat them as harshly as they know how with the forced labor. It's not working. So how are we going to eliminate them? You with me? I probably jumped ahead of you, but...
That's okay. Okay. Let's look at verse 18. And the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said unto them, Why have you done this thing and have saved the men children alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, Because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are delivered ere the midwives come in unto them.
So it gives you the names of these two women that are acting as midwives, Shiphrah and Puah. And they fear God more than they fear the king, so they don't do what the king commands, so they're not killing these males, they're sparing their lives.
And then he calls them, he said, Why did you do that? Why did you disobey? I've already read this.
So the king calls for the midwives. In other words, I'm going to bring you into account. Why aren't you doing what I told you to do? And he says, so when he asks, Why did you disobey me and spare the lives of these male babies? The midwife says, Listen, the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. These women are energetic. They're strong. Remember, they're under forced labor and all. So these women are not like that. By the time we arrive, they've already delivered. So, the males were spared up to that point, okay?
Verse 20. Therefore, God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty.
Lord, read 21 also.
And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them houses.
So because the midwives feared God and spared these male children, things went well for them. And the population kept increasing greatly, and the midwives, houses were provided for them. God took care of these women. Because they feared God more than they feared the king. That would be a lesson for us today. Would to God that people would fear God more than they fear the government, and then they would stand up for God with all this garbage that goes on. That's Antichrist, okay?
Mm-hmm. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, Every son that is born, you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive.
So then, this is not working. So Pharaoh just commands the people, you throw those male babies in the river. Let me ask you this, what would you do? Think about it. Would you sacrifice the baby's life to save yours? You ever heard of abortion? Millions, people selling out. So they had a decision to make. Will we obey the king, or will we be like the midwives and fear God more than we fear the king? And you're going to find that we know one that didn't throw the baby in the river. Okay? Didn't drown the baby.
So chapter 2, this chapter records the birth of Moses, his life being spared, Pharaoh's daughter taking him for her own son, his biological mother rearing him for pay, Moses killing an Egyptian, his fleeing to Midian, Moses helping rule 7 daughters and rule giving Zipporah to Moses to be his wife, the birth of Gershom, the death of Pharaoh, the cry of the Hebrews, God's remembrance of his covenant with Abraham, and his recognition of the Hebrew circumstances. So verses 1 and 2. And there went a man of the house of Levi, and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months.
So here's a woman and a man that are not obeying the king. Note this, they're Levites.
Mm-hmm.
So this baby is going to be a Levite. Okay, that's a good thing to know. You can overlook it. You can think of Aaron being a Levite and forget about Moses being a Levite. But they had the same parents, you understand. They recognized he was a good baby, so this woman, she hid this baby for 3 months. Now, I want you to think about that. How many of you know babies cry? And so she had her work cut out, okay? Mm-hmm. So she's hiding him for 3 months, okay?
And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him.
So when she feels like she can't hide him any longer, she makes a box out of bulrushes and then covers it with a tar-like substance to seal it, waterproof it, if you will. And she puts the baby in the box and puts it in the river among the reeds and near the bank, and then has the baby's sister to stand at a distance to see what would happen to him. Now, here's something else to learn. This baby's sister's Miriam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Miriam is older than Moses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just think about that.
And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it.
And so this is incredible, really, the way God works. Pharaoh's daughter, the one who said, kill the male babies, right? She comes to bathe in the river, which was a common practice, still is in a lot of places today, okay? And her maidservants walking with her by the side of the river, and they... When Pharaoh's daughter saw the box among the reeds, she sent one of the maidservants out to get it, see what this is.
And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, this is one of the Hebrews' children.
So she opens the box, she sees the baby, and the baby's crying. And Pharaoh's daughter has compassion for this baby. And one of the maidservants said that the baby belonged to one of the Hebrews.
Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?
It's just follow how this plays out. Boy, God has the scene set, right?
And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. And the woman took the child and nursed it.
And so the baby's sister, remember, she's watching to see what happens. So the baby's sister goes to Pharaoh's daughter and says, do you want me to get a Hebrew nursemaid? In other words, you want me to get someone to nurse this baby. And Pharaoh's daughter said yes. And so the baby's sister, Miriam, runs and gets her mama. And Pharaoh's daughter tells her, he says, now you take this baby and nurse it for me, and I'll pay you for your services. I'll pay you to nurse your own baby. You get the picture? And so the baby's mother took him home and nursed him. Now she's covered, okay? She's under the orders of Pharaoh's daughter. And I think about this, how God orchestrates things in such a phenomenal way that it's not just some casual person, just some regular citizen that finds this baby. But this thing is set up to where Pharaoh's daughter finds this baby and brings him up in the house of Pharaoh. God uses their enemy to train the leader that's going to take them out of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? He's learned in the ways of the Egyptians. And so by the time Moses goes back to get the Israelites out of Egypt, he is a man who has been trained. You with me? This is not some casual thing. He has the knowledge. He knows how. He knows leadership. You follow me? And so often God will use the enemy to train people to do the work of God. To me, it's incredible. I think of my own self, how along the way of life, working secular work all those years, how God was using the experiences of secular work to train me for things that I now do in the ministry. And I say they paid for it. I didn't have to pay for it. This is the way with Moses. God used the enemy to bring up the one who's going to lead Israel out of Egypt. Pretty amazing when you think about it.
And I think about this from the mama's standpoint. She was giving her baby up. Putting them in that ark. But you know, we just read, and I looked back at this verse at the end of Genesis. But as for you, you thought evil against me. The same could be said about Pharaoh and that law. You thought evil against me and the birth of my son. But God meant it for good. To the point where this woman now was being paid to nurse her own baby.
Now, something also you need to keep in mind is that that culture and other cultures other than the Western culture, they nurse their babies a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? She's training Moses in the way of the Hebrew. I'm going to tell you, those toddler years, young years, those are impressionable years. And so by the time Moses is 40 years old and all, he has instilled in him who he is.
Yes, that's right.
And he makes a choice to side with the Hebrew rather than the Egyptians. And I believe that's because of this nursing mama
mm-hmm.
pouring in to her baby the things of God. You think about it. You'll see it unfold as you go along.
You will, because it says he went out to his brethren. He knew.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're exactly right. Okay. In verse 11. Oh, here we go. And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand.
So the baby grows, the baby's weaned from the, his biological mother. She takes him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he becomes the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And she names him, note this, Pharaoh's daughter names him Moses, drawn out. That's what it means, okay? And so Moses grows up in Pharaoh's house. And by the time he's of age, he goes out and he observes how his own people, how does he know they're his own people? You following? Mm-hmm. So he noticed how his own people are being treated, and as he watched them going about their hard labor, he saw an Egyptian beating one of the Hebrew men. So Moses looks around and makes certain that no one sees him, and he killed the Egyptian and buried him in the sand. It just something instilled in him. You're mistreating my people.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stands up for his people. That's the beginning. As you follow his life, you'll find him constantly standing up for his people. He's got it in his heart.
Yeah. Verse 13. And when we went out of the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together. And he said to him that did the wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me? Have you killed the as you killed the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known.
So Moses goes out again. He's observing his people, these Hebrew people. But this time he sees a Hebrew man quarreling, two Hebrew men quarreling. And he asks the one who was in the wrong why he hit his associate, and the man replied, who appointed you to be ruler and judge over us? Now the cat gets out of the bag, so to speak. Do you intend to kill me like you killed that Egyptian? And when Moses heard this, he was afraid, and he thought, this is going to be revealed, what I did to this Egyptian. Pharaoh's going to find it out. I'm in trouble. So now he's going to have to flee for his life.
Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well.
So sure enough, the word gets back to Pharaoh and tells Pharaoh what Moses had done, how he'd killed the Egyptian. And so Pharaoh starts looking for Moses, intending to kill him. And Moses had to flee the land of Egypt, and he went to the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well.
Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock.
Now, I want you to pay attention to this. The priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came evidently to draw water and fill the trough to water their father's flock, their shepherdess, if you will. And so some shepherds came and tried to force them away, shepherds, plural, and Moses stands up for these ladies and helps them water their flock. A lot of people portray Moses as some weak, wimpy guy. No, this man is not weak and wimpy, you understand. This man's already killed one guy. And he's confronted two quarreling. He wasn't afraid of them, you understand. And so when he gets on this scene and these men try to take advantage of these women, he stands up for them and waters the flock. So don't ever view him. He may be the meekest man of earth, but not the weakest. And don't ever mistake weak for meek, or meek for weak. Never mistake meek for weak. Okay? It just means you're humble, but it doesn't mean a humble man's a pushover.
And when they came to rule their father, he said, "How is it that you are come so soon today?" And they said, "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds, and also drew water enough for us, and watered the flock."
So this priest, we find his name is Reuel. His daughters returned home earlier than normal. And so he asked about, how did you get here this quick, you know? Now, note this. They said an Egyptian. So Moses has the appearance of an Egyptian. He's dressing as an Egyptian. I mean, he brought up in the house of Pharaoh. He looks like an Egyptian. So they say this Egyptian stood up for us and delivered us out of the hands of these shepherds. And he drew enough water for them to water the flock. Note this, Moses drew the water. Okay?
And he said unto his daughters, "And where is he? Why is it that you have left the man? Call him that he may eat bread."
And think about this. Where's the guy? He helped you? And you didn't bring him home? Go back and get him. So he sends them back to get Moses.
And Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter.
Now you understand, Moses has nowhere to live. Mm-hmm. He's on the run. Mm-hmm. And so Reuel takes him into his home. And so he lives there, and then ultimately Reuel gives him Zipporah to be Moses' wife. Okay.
And she bare him a son, and called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a stranger in a strange land."
And so Zipporah becomes pregnant and gives birth to a son, whom Moses named Gershom, which means sojourner. He said, "I've been a foreigner in a strange land." Note this, here Moses is, appears to be an Egyptian, but we know he's a Hebrew, a Jew, but he marries someone from Midian. Okay? Zipporah.
And it came to pass in the progress of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage.
So Zipporah doesn't know the way of the Jews, okay? It's not into their culture, okay? And so, anyway, she's his wife. Well, Pharaoh finally dies. And some of the, during the time that Moses is living there in Midian, so evidently he was there for several years. You understand? You'll find so often that your training period lasts longer than your ministry. Think about it. So never despise your training period. Mm-hmm. You stay submitted. You do what you know to do. Stay submitted to the Lord because He's working the plan out for your life. It's interesting that Moses is tending sheep. In other words, he's going to be a shepherd, not of sheep, but of people. But he starts out with animals. If you can take care of the animals, then you'll probably be able to handle the people who act like animals. I shouldn't have said that, right? We'll stop there. It's our time's up, so we'll stop there. We'll pick back up in the next session. There's so much to glean out of this if you just really pay attention to it. Father, I thank you that you bless us indeed, you enlarge our territory, your hands with us to keep us from evil so that we do not cause pain. You bless us and keep us, you make your face to shine upon us, you're gracious unto us, you lift up your countenance upon us, and you give us peace. The Lord, we invite you to rise up, let your enemies be scattered, and those who hate you flee before you. Amen. You guys have a great rest of the week. Stay warm as you mark our place.
I need to.